Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:05 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 25th, and there really is a lot going on in here today. But I thought we'd kick off and look at the World Equity Index futures, because the really big figure here is the CSI 300, and the future was up 6.69%. That's a very significant move, because what it very clearly states is that Chinese investors are now in a hurry to price in the end of the trade war. And the stock market in China has been going down for over a year. It rallied last week to break above the trend mean, and it had rallied the week before to break the sequence of lower rally highs. And the fact that the 2500 point level has represented support, whereas it had represented resistance between 2012 and 2014, is suggestive of the fact that technicals are definitely at play here. But the other point, of course, is that Chinese bull markets, or at least bull markets in China, tend to be state-sponsored. And it is certainly, I think, part of the ingredient list here, in terms of the move that we've had, that China is on the cusp of potentially reeling back its policy of clamping down on speculation, and that is what people are starting to price in as well. So there is the real possibility that China is not going to see the trade war deteriorate further. It remains to be seen, and we certainly don't really have any intelligence yet as to exactly what China has offered in terms of substantive actions. If they have just offered money and that has been accepted, well, that is going to even further crystallize their view that capitalism is morally bankrupt and that anything can be achieved by simply buying people off. And unfortunately, that is a realistic possibility, because President Trump, I think more than any other factor, wants to win the next election. So that's certainly something that is going to be at the back of his mind. When we look at what's going on in terms of the S&P 500, it very briefly today spent some time above the 2800 point level. Well, we're right in the region of the peaks from October, November, and December. Considering that we have now come, we have at least some news on which to base the opinion that there is likely to be a deal between China and the USA, one would perhaps have thought, well, that the stock market should be in more positive territory. The fact that it has just about been able to squeeze out a positive outcome isn't particularly encouraging, but of course there are other factors that are at play here. Well, the first of those is that the Federal Reserve indicated at the end of last year that they are going to provide a backstop, that there probably is going to be a Powell put, but we've had a substantial rally since then, and I think there is this sort of catch-22 situation that the markets are want to see evidence of a Powell put. But in order to get the evidence, you'd have to have a pullback. And that if the markets rally too much, then the Federal Reserve is likely to then again raise interest rates, which, of course, would convince the market that there isn't a Powell put. So that is the contradiction that investors are grappling with at the moment. And this is all happening in the region of previous peaks, and the replacing of a very deep oversold condition with a short-term overbought condition. So I think there is a strong likelihood that we are going to get some consolidation in here. Quite whether that takes the balance of the week or whether it happens over the next couple of weeks remains to be seen, but consolidation certainly does look to be in the market's future. So I think that's the other important point here. But then I think something that is of equal importance in here is the fact that Roche just paid 138% premium for Spark Therapeutics. The share was up $61 in here today, so you can just cast your eye in here. That's where the price opened and closed. This is, I remember at an MIT conference a few years ago hearing the CEO of Spark Therapeutics speaking. And she came across as a very sane lady and was making some very clear points about just how challenging the immuno-oncology sector is. But at the same time, she was still enthusiastic about the potential for the sector. But genetics is advancing in an incredibly rapid manner. Then you have genetic sequencing, which is becoming progressively cheaper. You have CRISPR, which is genetic editing. And there was also news in here today that it was CRISPR Therapeutics of the three companies claiming to own the patent. But they have said now that in conjunction with their partner, I think it was Vertex Pharmaceuticals, that they've treated their first patient. So that's rather impressive. Then you have the fact that you have Novartis, which is starting to try and grapple with this question of the value of a life. It's really that it's that simple. The vast majority of pharmaceutical companies are very much oriented towards treating chronic conditions. And so treating a chronic condition means that what you're really doing is treating the symptoms. You're not really treating the underlying cause, so it's incurable. That represents a wonderful set of cash flows for the life of the patient. That's particularly true of diabetes or arthritis, because there is no cure. There isn't really anything you can do for someone in other than manage their symptoms. And eventually, there will probably be some form of surgery involved, again, aimed at managing symptoms rather than the root cause. Well, the kinds of solutions that are being pioneered by the immuno-oncology sector in particular, but also companies like Spark Therapeutics, is that you just need one treatment. So there is a treatment that Novartis is pioneering that competes with a chronic condition type treatment that Biogen has provided. Well, they want to price the one-shot treatment at $1.5 million. In fact, that is the value that a third party put on it. Novartis wants to charge, in fact, $3.5 million. Well, obviously, the first treatment will be very expensive. And right now, these types of genetic treatments are really only being aimed at what might be considered to be rather rare diseases. It's only a matter of time, though, before we start to see really compelling treatments for the big spender chronic conditions. Now, that is going to represent an existential threat for the conventional pharmaceutical industry, because the pace and cost of innovation are moving in opposite directions. So innovation is accelerating and cost is depreciating. And that is both going to create the environment where you're going to get upstart movements that are going to come up with novel solutions in a much more rapid fire environment. It is going to be increasingly difficult for the pharmaceutical companies to keep up. So the pace of M&A activity is likely to accelerate. And I think that was certainly a feature about 18 months ago, and I think we're probably going to move back into exactly that kind of situation now. So the Nasdaq Biotech Index was breaking up out of its range in here today to new recovery highs, and it is now at least pulling away from the region of the trend mean. When we look at the immuno-oncology ETF, then it has rebounded and is also pushing up to new recovery highs, but more importantly, it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs evident over much of the last year. So there has been some substantial selling pressure, but the reality is that we are moving increasingly towards commercialization of this sector, and it is something that is going to be a major part of the healthcare sector in future. By removing these massive costs associated with healthcare, that alone is a massive productivity provider. So if we start to think about what it is that could enhance the secular bull market hypothesis, well, innovation in this healthcare sector is certainly one of those, because by its very nature, it extends the working life of millions of people and therefore enhances their productivity. So this is not just simply a sector to pay attention to from a profit potential idea generator, but also because of the much wider impact that it has. The other big story in here today was to do with the pound. And Jeremy Corbyn has said that he will now support a second referendum. And the pound has rallied back above the 115 area versus the euro. This is the upper side of what is an 18-month base formation. Well, what this very clearly now states is that the next election, regardless of the other policies that are propagated, it really is going to be about in or out. And that puts a great deal of pressure on the Conservatives in their votes to accept Theresa May's deal. Theresa May's deal is reviled by the vast majority of the party, but they are now faced with a rather stark question, whether they are going to support the deal and avoid an election, or whether they are going to risk an election and both losing their majority in the House of Commons as well as the chance to leave the EU. That's a rather difficult prognostication. The chances of an outright hard Brexit are receding because there are a number of amendments to ensure that does not happen. So it's extremely unlikely that what people thought they were voting for is going to be delivered upon, because Theresa May's deal is membership in all but name. So that suggests that the pound is going to do better from here because it removes uncertainty, despite the fact that by voting for Brexit, what people in the UK were essentially voting for was the right to self-determine what their future is going to be. Well, that is not being delivered upon, and that is probably going to result in a lurch to the fringes of the political spectrum. So it isn't at all beyond the bounds of possibility that when the next election occurs, it is going to be a face-off between potentially Jeremy Corbyn and Rees-Mogg. So that's a realistic possibility, and that the vote will be split by the evolution of a centrist third party. So there is certainly the scope here for a further rally in the pound, but one has to question just how much of that gain it can hold if we're going to get additional uncertainty on the political front. What I find particularly interesting is that when we look at the inflation-protected gilts, they're not simply negative, but they're very negative at a negative of 2%. That's the lower side of the range. What this is suggesting is that investors have bid these up in an effort to protect themselves from coming inflation already. But because we have these low yields, that they're not really doing their job. So this suggests that there is a lot of hedging activity going on. And of course, when we look at the regular 10-year, well, what we're presented with has been a sequence of higher reaction lows, and that has now been broken. So the yield is going to have to rally soon if the potential for an inflationary environment is to remain credible. What I find particularly interesting too is that gold prices have surmounted the £1,000 level, and when that is sort of looked at in terms of everything else that is happening in terms of the UK economy, it also is suggestive of some hedging against an unruly outcome. So I think we are definitely seeing a narrowing of the potential outcomes, and that we are likely to have an answer to what to expect from the Brexit debacle over the course of the next few months. In the meantime, I think it is quite likely that the UK is going to sue for a delay to Brexit while this domestic political environment gets resolved. Now, if we go back now and think about what, in fact, the significant rally we've seen in China portends, well, it's of particularly good news to Europe. European shares are really quite oversold. The DAX has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs. It is approximating the region of the trend mean. This is the first area of potential resistance, so we can see a scope here for some consolidation, but I think the most likely scenario here is that if China continues to rally, then that's likely to represent a tailwind to global growth, and that should be good for Europe. And the European markets have been so moribund that they are finally starting to catch a bid. So this is, I think, one of the most overlooked markets because of the massive political risk. But the reality is that when we look at the ECB, they are still increasing the size of their balance sheet. And as long as that is the case, then it would be very difficult to defend the contention that the process of quantitative easing is in fact over. If liquidity is continuing to expand, then that should generally be positive for the stock market. And I think once the market learns that, or I think appreciates that, well, then it's probably going to put a cap on euro rallies. But the euro was a little bit steadier in here today, and not least because of the risk trade starting to come out of the US dollar. With a somewhat softer US dollar, the renminbi was also a little bit steadier in here today, but not in an especially dynamic manner. Then the Australian dollar, which had been pulling back, well, had a downside key reversal three sessions ago, has not followed through on the downside, and it is now coming back towards that 72 level. Well, I think when we look at the weekly chart, we can see clearly there is still a sequence of lower rally highs. It has definitely been finding support around the 70 cent level, but it is going to need to sustain a move above the trend mean to break the downtrend. I saw something on mining.com this morning to the effect that the Australian coal sector is firing on all cylinders, to pardon the pun, but what we're seeing from the ASX 200 is that the rally is still very much intact. And if China does continue to rally, then that should be very good news for Australia, considering China represents the its biggest export market. But China rallying is probably something that can be positive, viewed as positive for the entire global economy. The Indian stock market was also rallying in here today. It was a generally firm day right across the Asian region. The Indonesian market has been consolidating in the region of the peak from back in early 2018. That's at least partially unwinding the overbought condition, relative to the trend mean. So that's a positive outcome. But the pullback in the oil price is also likely to be a significant tailwind to the major consumers, and a number of those consumers are in the Asian region. What this is, this pullback today of almost $2.50 on Brent crude is confirming at least near-term resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it's going to have to put in a higher reaction low in order to continue to support the, or I guess, to lend credence to the support building hypothesis. Now, when we look at what's going on in Latin America, well, Brazil has been a relative strength leader over the course of the last few months, not least since Bolsonaro's electoral victory, and the index has been really just consolidating. So far, this consolidation is pretty similar to the one we saw at the end of 2018, and I think that's one of the more positive outcomes that we might have hoped for. What it suggests is that with also China starting to do better, then that should be beneficial for commodity exporters. Now, when we look at copper, it had been starting to exhibit relative strength in the last week or so, but it was a little bit softer in here today. It is going to have to sustain a move back, or it's going to have to sustain the breakout, I should say, in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The LME Metals Index, which has just about pushed back above the trend mean, also needs to hold that move, but this is by far the most bullish action we've seen in a fair amount of time, and it really is supportive of the view that we are, that a global reflation trade should probably be given the benefit of the doubt. Then the other index that it really does spring to mind with regard to the trade war in China is the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index. It had type 2 top formation characteristics in early 2018, and then it had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. Now we've had a rip-roaring advance that has taken it from a new reaction low all the way back to test the peak values around 1400. So it was in negative territory in here today, having gapped higher earlier on. Now the question is, how much of this advance is it going to hold during any process of consolidation? And that is going to be a big question, considering that the semiconductors index does tend to be a lead indicator. Then Alibaba was in clearly positive territory in here today and is breaking up and out of this most recent range and is clearing the region of the trend mean. That's I think also an important move that we've seen in some of the other tech companies from China. JD.com has unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean, so we may get some consolidation, but it has certainly broken the downtrend. Baidu had not pulled back by nearly the same extent as some of the other Chinese tech companies, but it is it really does need to continue to demonstrate support around the 150 area. And Tencent, which had led on the downside all the way through last year, has broken its sequence of lower rally highs and is consolidating in the region of the trend mean. Well, what this also suggests is that when we think about the relative strength in the various parts of the Chinese stock market, that the technology companies are getting less of a bid than the banks, for example, because the banks have rallied really very significantly in here today. So that also is supportive of the view that this advance is at least state-sponsored. So that is a, I think, rather a positive development. I think when we think about the outlook for the global economy, obviously we have a significant number of questions that still need to be resolved. The trade war is certainly one that does appear to be getting better. What's happening in terms of Brexit is looking increasingly likely that it is moving towards a narrowing of options. Then you have North Korea. and the potential for a deal to be done there. I suspect that it is probably going to take a little bit more time, but the KOSPI index is back above its trend mean. So I think there is the potential here that we are going to see a number of the things that people were worried about starting to improve. That should help to support the stock market, but we've had a very impressive rally, so I think it's likely we're going to get a pause in consolidation. Meanwhile, the rebound that we've seen on the gold price has paused. So far, this pause is relatively similar sized to the one that we saw at the beginning of February and in January. So, as long as it is holding the lows around the $1,320 level, that's likely to be, or there'll be no cause for alarm among investors. If the sequence of higher reaction lows is broken, then we're going to have to then see a higher reaction low. I think, considering that we're talking about gold and it is historically a very volatile price chart, then what I'm particularly looking for is that it hold the majority of the advance during any consolidation that occurs, and not least because it is right in the region of the upper side of what is effectively a 6-year base formation. So I think these are this is a decision-making process that we have here in this long range for gold, and we do have a short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean, so it wouldn't be beyond the scope of the imagination to see some consolidation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.